It must not be supposed that Dr. Hood's apartments excluded luxury or even poetry. These things were there, in their place. But one felt that they were never allowed out of their place. Luxury was there. There stood upon a special table 8 or 10 boxes of the best cigars. But they were built upon a plan so that the strongest were always nearest the wall and the mildest nearest the window. A tantalus containing 3 kinds of spirits, all of liqueur excellence, stood always on this table of luxury. But the fanciful have asserted that the whisky, brandy, and rum seemed always to stand at the same level. Poetry was there. The left-hand corner of the room was lined with as complete a set of English classics as the right hand could show of English and foreign physiologists. But if one took a volume of Chaucer or Shelley from that rank, its absence irritated the mind like a gap in a man's front teeth. One could not say the books were never read. Probably they were. But there was a sense of their being chained to their places, like the Bibles in the old churches. Dr. Hood treated his private bookshelf as if it were a public library. And if this strict scientific intangibility steeped even the shelves laden with lyrics and ballads, and the tables laden with drink and tobacco, it goes without saying that yet more of such heathen holiness protected the other shelves that held the specialist's library and the other tables that sustained the frail and even fairy-like instruments of chemistry or mechanics. Dr. Hood paced the length of his string of apartments, bounded, as the boys' geographies say, on the east by the North Sea and on the west by the serried ranks of his sociological and criminologist's library. He was clad in an artist's velvet, but with none of an artist's negligence. His hair was heavily shot with grey, but growing thick and healthy. His face was lean, but sanguine and expectant. Everything about him and his room indicated something at once rigid and restless, like that great northern sea by which, on pure principles of hygiene, he had built his home. Fate, being in a funny mood, pushed the door open and introduced into those long, strict, sea-flanked apartments one who was perhaps the most startling opposite of them and their master. In answer to a curt but civil summons, the door opened inwards, and there shambled into the room a shapeless little figure, which seemed to find its own hat and umbrella as unmanageable as a mass of luggage. The umbrella was a black and prosaic bundle long past repair. The hat was a broad-curved black hat, clerical but not common in England. The man was the very embodiment of all that is homely and helpless. The doctor regarded the newcomer with a restrained astonishment, not unlike that he would have shown if some huge but obviously harmless sea beast had crawled into his room. The newcomer regarded the doctor with that beaming but breathless geniality which characterizes a corpulent charwoman who has just managed to stuff herself into an omnibus. It is a rich confusion of social self-congratulation and bodily disarray. His hat tumbled to the carpet, his heavy umbrella slipped between his knees with a thud. He reached after the one and ducked after the other, but with an unimpaired smile on his round face spoke simultaneously as follows. "My name is Brown. Pray excuse me, I've come about the business of the McNabs. I have heard you often help people out of such troubles. Pray excuse me if I am wrong." By this time he had sprawlingly recovered the hat and made an odd little bobbing bow over it, as if setting everything quite right. "I hardly understand you," replied the scientist with cold intensity of manner. "I fear you have mistaken the chambers. I am Dr. Hood, and my work is almost entirely literary and educational. It is true that I have sometimes been consulted by the police in cases of peculiar difficulty and importance, but..." "Oh, this is of the greatest importance," broke in the little man called Brown. "Why, her mother won't let them get engaged." And he leaned back in his chair in radiant rationality. The brows of Dr. Hood were drawn down darkly, but the eyes under them were bright with something that might be anger or might be amusement. "And still," he said, "I do not quite understand." "You see, they want to get married," said the man with the clerical hat. "Maggie McNab and young Todd Hunter want to get married. Now what can be more important than that?" The great Orion Hood's scientific triumphs had deprived him of many things, some said of his health, others of his God. But they had not wholly despoiled him of his sense of the absurd. At the last plea of the ingenuous priest, a chuckle broke out of him from inside, and he threw himself into an armchair in an ironical attitude of the consulting physician. "Mr. Brown," he said gravely, "it is quite 14.5 years since I was personally asked to test a personal problem. Then it was the case of an attempt to poison the French president at a Lord Mayor's banquet. It is now, I understand, a question of whether some friend of yours called Maggie is a suitable fiancé for some friend of hers called Todd Hunter. Well, Mr. Brown, I am a sportsman. I will take it on. I will give the McNab family my best advice, as good as I gave the French Republic and the King of England. No, better. 14 years better. I have nothing else to do this afternoon. Tell me your story."